Welcome back, Dead Men Roll No Critters, to another episode. That's what they're called, right? Another episode of what we are affectionately calling the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits, end of the podcast. Yeah. I am your forever GM that is soon to not be, perhaps, Patrick, and joining me this week for a little one-on-one chat is the hero of the podcast, Seth.
Very incorrect.
Well, you think it's Tyler? No.
Yeah. Yes. He did like almost all of the talking.
Yeah, but you're the one that didn't compromise his morals.
I see.
The entire time.
I see. All right. Well.
Yeah. End of Dead Men Roll No Crits. We have, at this point, finished the podcast, even though when we're recording this, we are still recording the final four episodes.
Yeah, still have a couple more to go, but
we are recording this basically about everything that's happened thus far and chatting with all the players over the next couple weeks. And over the last few weeks, we've been doing some one-on-one player interviews. And that's what this is, Seth. It's just you and me this week.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
But yeah, just a little celebration of the podcast as we finish it up, because, yeah, like I said, unless they make another pirate campaign, Dead Men Roll No Crits is over, you know?
Yeah.
There's not another Skull and Shackles campaign in here for us. There's not a season 1.5, I guess.
That's true.
So, yeah, but we are putting her to bed by doing these little post-podcast chats, and I've done the ones with the other players and they've gone pretty well. I've just got 10 kind of general questions to chat you up about.
Yeah.
And we'll do more questions with the entire group. Some of the same ones probably, but
probably on that stream at the end.
I was thinking if we have time, we could do a little chit chat, but
maybe do some audience Q&A.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking about taking questions there, you know, answering like, who do you think you are? And those kind of things.
If, oh, jeez. Like,
got that of me.
Who do you think you are? Like, just get really aggressive.
Who gives you the right? No, Seth, this week we're just talking about Seth. We're talking about Honto. We're talking about Osric. And the first question is about that, is comparing and contrasting your player characters. You know, did you have fun making two characters this campaign? Did you feel like you leaned on one a little harder than the other? Have you ever done this before?
I've certainly done this before. Well, so I remember right around when I made Honto at the very beginning, I was at a point where I was kind of burnt out. I had just come off of non-standard action, running that whole bear of a thing. And then I was trying to get a couple other projects started and I couldn't. And I remember you invited me to do this, and like, this was in the midst of COVID, and I was like, you know what, I can handle this. So I made a very stoic character. I made a character who was good at what he did and didn't necessarily have a lot to say, which is fine as a character concept in like a story or something. But in terms of actually playing as the character, it kind of made role-playing difficult without just kind of hijacking the narrative and just explaining everything that he was doing. But Oz, on the other hand, I made a quirky, very laissez-faire witch / occultist that viewed everything supernatural and everything divine or magical as just kind of a novel mystery to solve or observe. Made him considerably more chatty, more social. So when it came to combat by the end of the game, I loved to play Honto a lot more because I feel like he was much more effective at that. But
monks get crazy stuff in higher levels, especially. Boy, howdy.
Meanwhile, Oz was a lot more fun to play in social situations for sure. So that's kind of where I ended up with those two.
Yeah. Yeah. So in different situations, I feel like a lot of your colleagues on the podcast did the same thing where, you know, I think Tyler was a little sick of being captain and party face, so he like melted a little bit back into Kovic.
He made a Honto like in Kovic, almost
a stoic hunter kind of character. Mm-hmm. And Bert cut loose with Bartleby and made a silly character. Oh, man.
I love Bartleby.
Yeah. You know, I will say I think Honto is one of my favorite characters kind of in general.
Well, thank you.
But Bartleby's is up there, too.
Oh, yeah. Bartleby might as well be the mascot of the campaign.
Bartleby could have been an A-team. So that's what, you know, we made these B-team characters for is like, what happens if a main character dies? You know, what's going to happen? It's like, well, we're just going to promote. Like, you play the B-team character. Mm-hmm. And I would have been very sad if Candoso died, but I would have been pretty happy if you guys had Bartleby
just around more. The fun character, for sure.
Not to say he wasn't, you know, we played a lot with A and B-team. Question number two, Seth, do you have a favorite moment for either character in the story adventure? Favorite thing that happened story-wise or I guess gameplay-wise?
I mean, part of it's just kind of the way the campaign went, and part of it's just like the way the dice went. I feel like a lot of the moments where Oz was about to shine or was about to have a cool moment, he just got raffle stomped, unfortunately. He really never found his niche in combat, not the way that I wished it he would. But that's okay. Stuff like that happens. I think my favorite moment for Oz at the end of the day is when they encountered that assassin and he permanently blinded him like on turn one.
I was so sad.
I was so, just like, oh, I was like, okay,
this is going to be a crazy fight. It's like, oh, goodness.
It's like, oh, what does it mean if I critically fail the save? Well, it means he's permanently blind, Patrick.
And honestly, it's one of the things I love about Pathfinder 2nd Edition is your heroes have hero points and they can kind of affect some things. I mean, not that they always work, but a little bit in their favor. But
I think you're talking to the person that they worked for the least.
I honestly love that GMs, if they roll that one, they are stuck with that one, you know? And it's not something that you can really, like, make your character around is blinding your GM's characters. But when it happens, it's pretty raucous, pretty fun.
And that was back when he was a witch, before I made the switch over to Thaumaturge, and thoroughly complicated playing the character for very little combat benefit.
It's very complicated, but it is a really cool class. I've looked into it. So many of the like advanced player guide classes I'm just in love with conceptually. Like Investigator, I just love. What else?
So for Honto.
Yeah. Story bit.
I mean, maybe just because it's a little bit more fresh in my mind, but kind of his denouement for me is was kind of like the crowning moment for him, just because it was something that was just slowly built towards throughout the entire campaign.
Yeah. And I didn't really have much of an end goal for Candoso or Alaris. I kind of figured that, you know, she was on a quest to find her uncle. Didn't really have an idea of exactly where Tyler's character was going. It changed a lot for Cassius. And
it did.
But I always had kind of an idea for Honto of, you know, obviously he's on very much an Arthurian kind of quest.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's one of those things. It's like, it's crazy to try and do that over 200 episodes, like a long quest like that. But, you know, every two books or so, you got a stone and we're able to keep that thread going.
I mean, like, there's a couple combat moments that stand out for me. I think kind of around the same time, and this is when we were getting the guest characters also from the listeners. This is the one where we had Kukaruk in the show with us, and Honto ascended the side of a building to get behind somebody on a roof in order to kick them off of it and then ride them down to the ground with a flurry of blows. That was such a fun moment.
I think there was some blinding in that fight too. I think Kukaruk did.
He might have done some
blinding. Or cast darkness on someone.
Yes, that's what it was. It was darkness.
You just like cast darkness, fighting people on rooftops and taking their vision away. It sounds like
it felt like a bit of a repeat.
If I had a nickel for every time
I'd have two nickels.
Killers. But It's not a lot. Yeah, my third question is, yeah, do your characters get a happy ending, or where you think they might have ended up towards the end of the campaign? And it sounds like yay.
Hopefully. For Honto, sure. It's bittersweet. But, you know, he was never a happy character to begin with. I wasn't. I didn't make the character to be a comic relief or to be a joyous person. He was still young and he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, at least from his perspective. And he didn't have a lot to be happy about, especially after getting press ganged at the beginning. Yeah.
It's a bit so. Tyler said the same thing. He was like, he was so ready to play this happy-go-lucky pirate captain and get a quirky crew together. And then I was like, oh, you don't understand what happens at the beginning of this campaign. Like, obviously,
yeah,
Jabert knew what
happened. Yeah.
And decided not to tell anybody. Not spoil the surprise, but yes.
But yeah, so where he ends up, I think, is a much happier place. Yeah. Bittersweet because of certain events. I don't know when this is being aired, so I don't want to spoil too much. But
this is after episode 200. So this is after everything said and done.
Okay.
So yeah. Technically, our listeners will have more information than anybody than we you have
currently. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I think him leaving a positive impact and then kind of departing from a life that had been complicated for him and had caused him a lot of sorrow to kind of seek new horizons along with the person that meant the most to him. Yeah, I think ultimately it's a very positive outcome for him. When I think about Oz, though, his original goal, honestly, was he had a cursed bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a discussion at some point during the game where it really felt like the witch just wasn't getting anything done in terms of benefiting the combat. It seemed like a lot of the tools that I had in his toolkit just rarely had any use.
I love first edition witches too.
Yeah, no, and I don't think that the witch is bad. I just think that a lot of the stuff that we ended up doing made it not useful. Yeah. So when I had noticed the Thaumaturge, I was like, well, this is basically just an alternate version of the character in terms of the person who walks around with all these little bits and bobs and charms of different deities and whatnot. Like, it fit him really well. So I was like, all right, let's try this out. And you were okay with it. So like the idea that I had was for that was that he had managed to actually cleanse himself and now just possessed all this occult knowledge without actually having any of the strong magic flowing within his veins anymore.
Yeah. So there's definitely not ramifications for changing your classes midway through that you're going to find out in the next four episodes.
Oh, dear. All right.
Spoiler. Everyone else knows what already happened, but now that you bring it up, I think I mentioned it's right around the same time in book four. I think I offered Tyler to switch from Swashbuckler, but he was like, he was not having it. I was like,
you're not going to get him to switch. No,
but it's like, it was around the time we was discovering his heritage, his lineage and stuff.
I was sure.
Like, you could totally turn into like a magic user at this point if you wanted to get something different going on, but he was pretty deep into it.
No. And I think he also wanted to, explore the Swashbuckler and like just kind of prove to himself and maybe to others whether it was actually a capable class or not. You know, he got real effective towards the end.
I will say so. Yeah.
Cassius started doing some real big boy stuff in fights towards the very end.
And so, Kovic, I'm afraid of those both.
Yeah, for sure. So Oz, like, I mean, yeah, he kind of was just a crew member after a certain point. So
I mean, for all the
I have B-team, to imagine,
yeah, they had to take background roles for the most part. I think I gave the most to Bartleby. But that was because I didn't have as much for Candoso as I thought I was going to.
Right, like, yeah.
We just didn't play into a lot of his storyline kind of stuff. So
yeah. I think Oz at this point is probably just would be happy just being an advisor or just being somewhere in Cassius's circle. This life suits him.
I think that's where a lot of the B team we've discussed end up. Maybe one goes with Alaris, but I think a lot of them are just like Port Peril.
Owlbear, who remained relevant and
stoically quiet behind Alaris.
Frequently featured.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about making just him, like, if anyone dies, they have to play Owlbear. But I was like, nobody wants to play Owlbear. Owlbear, her turn. Question for Seth is, what are your favorite moments as a player from this campaign? Not playing the campaign, but not as your character, but as a player. It could be, it could be stuff that we didn't record as well. If it happened off air, that's fine.
No. I think honestly, probably my favorite moment campaign wise was when we finally put our feet down and took what was to become the Tidebreaker from Plug and his crew. I think that we had been under an oppressive boot for an appropriate amount of time, that when that happened, it felt good to
the entire first book. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And we kind of stretched that one out a little bit, if I remember correctly. So,
yeah, not as much. I think when I first played this campaign, I made that part a little bit longer because I was trying to really seed a lot of hatred for Barnabas Harrigan.
It worked.
Yeah. Yes. I guess fear, respect, all those things. But Plug was his arm, you know, his right hand or whatever. So being able to kill him, pretty satisfying, I imagine.
Well, no, it was that, sure, but it was also the notion that we were going to set off on our own at that point. Like we were able to take control of our destiny. So
I want to get to question six, so maybe we'll come back to five, because this relates to this. Almost everyone has said book two, but feel free to say something else. What was your favorite book or chapter from the campaign? A lot of people say two, because it's after you take the Tidebreaker and you kind of start going off and having your own pirate adventures and your own crew. It's where we do a lot of the Ichito Greg / Scrimshaw Jack fun times.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty easy pick for me also, just because it was early on enough and we weren't burdened by so much and we were still kind of discovering and creating the story at that point. Yeah, there are some highlights in the other books, but when I think back, I think probably like the most like just like fun for fun's sake was happening around the time of book two for sure.
I'm not gonna lie, I enjoyed book four for a lot of reasons. I love the Cyclops and that dungeon crawl, which is crazy. But I do love the end of book two, you fighting the Sahugeen and finding Nimalia and all that crazy stuff. That feels like a super piratey adventure, because you're also finding treasure, you know, buried, an old pirate's buried treasure. And I think, I forget if book two or book three is where you fight Whalebone Pilk, the ghost pirate. There's just so many crazy, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean like adventures.
it wasn't quite tying together for one big narrative yet, so it felt
real more political later on.
It felt a lot more adventurous early on.
Do you have we'll go back to question five. Did the idea that you had in your head for the characters come to fruition? Did you foresee that this kind of ending with Honto especially?
I mean, it evolved. I always wanted him to come back as a different person. I always wanted him to transform from the lost youth that he was leaving his home to somebody who was more capable and knew how to get things done and had a plan. So, yeah, that's ultimately the plan I had for Honto, but it evolved, obviously. And
it's so funny because it's definitely just like a factor of the character mechanically getting stronger over time, but there was a lot of consternation about Honto not being able to do a lot of stuff earlier on in the campaign, and then later on, just as like, you know, the mechanics change, it's like, oh, can I jump up like 20 feet, you know, to so-and-so legends? Like, yeah, by the rules, monks can do some crazy stuff later on. And it was very fun to see the character change over time and become just like, I've had multiple PF2E monks as GM, and I'm probably going to get more in the next campaign I do with my friends up here. They're great. They're awesome.
Yeah. They're fun to play. I like high mobility. So that's a big deal for me. they're probably not like the best pick, obviously, for
they're not as scary as barbarians. Barbarians are super scary as a GM.
Barbarians have the capacity to just dump triple digits on your lap.
Well, we're level three at this little mini campaign we're doing, and one did like 40 damage with a single attack. I was like, oh,
you're not supposed to do that this early. What the heck?
No, my CR3 creature has like 60 HP. Please don't. Please don't. This is what I had planned for the next hour of this combat.
Yeah. As far as Oz goes, though, I didn't really know what I wanted out of him. So honestly, any ending is as good as any for him.
There's four more episodes. Tell me what you want. I'll make it happen.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, we're recording this between 196 and 197. So
yeah,
you could say it and speak it into existence right now.
Did you say speak it in?
Speak it in. the classic Japanese JRPG.
Speak it in. The tale of 100 heroes.
Oh my God, is that they're making like a remastered version of that? Is that out yet?
I don't think so.
Oh man, they pushed that back. Anyway,
I really liked the third one.
Sweet. Oh, well, too bad this remaster is 1 and 2.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's whatever.
Seth, question the seventh. What was your least favorite part of the adventure?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's fine to say book four. A lot of people have, I think, already.
Really?
Well,
I don't think it was book four.
It doesn't have to be an entire book. It could be just like a section, you know, part.
Right. I have trouble thinking of like a part that I just really wholly disliked. For me, maybe it would be somewhere around like the end of book three to the start of book four, when we started kind of operating as an ally of Kurdax. We were doing a lot of intrigue and a lot of stuff like that that Honto wasn't particularly good at. And at that point, Oz was still a witch. So
I think it was, toward the beginning of book three, when you allied with Tessa Fairwind as well.
And yeah.
Before the regatta. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that I didn't like it story wise. It's just that for me, I didn't feel like I had a lot to do with the characters that I had, but that's not a failing of any kind on your part or the story's part. That's just kind of the characters I made, you know?
Well, to be fair, I think, and we'll talk about this in maybe one of the other end of Demon Ronald Cribs episodes, I think that's the book I cut the most out of.
Oh, really?
And it was still like too much. Yeah, because I remember playing that for the first time and my players just losing the thread completely. Like the plot of, you know, doing so-and-so quest to get like this MacGuffin and then going here and blah blah blah.
Yeah, it definitely felt the weakest plot wise, right? Like it was an attempt to like justify a course correction for the players, right?
Yeah, and then you get to the Free Captain's Regatta and it's like a fun adventure again, you know? Goonies style adventure. And
yeah.
But that's a very short part of the book. Same thing with book five a little bit. Those side quests though felt very good to me. Then you got the taking on Barnabas Harrigan at the end, which is like its whole thing. But
yes,
if question eight, you could play the entire campaign over again, would you change up these characters, or do you think you would have liked to have done a different style character, a different class character? I know that's a lot for one question.
No. I mean, like, you know, it's coherent. I know what you're asking. It's just a matter of me thinking, like, what would I have done differently? I don't think I would change much. I would maybe alter Honto's personality a little bit more and establish him as a more social character early on, just so that Tyler wouldn't have to do so much talking.
No, he was going to no matter what.
I get it, but you know, being able to take some of that burden, I wish I could have been there for him in that regard a little bit more. But no, Honto. I had to make a big sad lizard.
Honto, the monk with a bard archetype.
Not quite bardic, but maybe more just maybe make him more monk-like. Like at the beginning, like it, the spiritual aspect of Hanto was completely removed from his daily life and from his combat. That was something that was entirely personal to him. But maybe I could have made a version of him where he delivers more wisdom, or, you know, offers more monkly advice at some points, or tries to impart things like that. Maybe I could have done something like that instead. That would definitely change a few things.
More magical monk as opposed to Jackie Chan style. Monk. I feel you. Sure. Question 9. Do you have advice for listeners that want to make pirate PCs for a campaign or a adventure kind of like this or other similar characters?
Pirates suck.
Make the anti-pirate and have a good time.
Be an anti-pirate. What's that pirate?
What's more rebellious than not being a rebel?
I think Oz was, for me, I think was like a more successful pirate design, because a lot of people think pirates and, you know, they think just grog, swashbuckling roughnecks who just steal and whatnot. But there are other kinds. There are more intellectual pirates. There's room on the crew for a lot of different kinds of people. And, you know, I thought having somebody who specialized in curses and whatnot had a very good niche to fit in on a crew that probably had a lot of superstitious people.
Oh, pirates are all about curses.
Yeah, and the occult and whatnot. So
cursed treasure all over the place.
There's all kinds of angles you can go to make a pirate character. So yeah, I don't know. I guess just consider your options. Don't think narrowly about don't just like slap a tricorn and a scimitar on someone and just start speaking in an accent. Like, just think about motivations, like what would drive them to be on a crew like that.
That's what I would do if I was a pirate character. It's like, I've got a curved sword.
I talk a curved sword and a tricorn. R.
So that's going to do it.
It's like the shark from Toy Story. He's like, hi, everyone, I'm Woody. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm a cowboy. Question 10 is the final question. Just your final thoughts on your characters, your play, the campaign, reflecting back. Do you feel like you've changed as a player, or, you know, are you ready for more long term kind of adventures like this?
I don't know yet. In my head, there's things I want to do, and we've talked about other things that we want to do, and just especially coming off of a long recorded game like this, like part of me wants to just do something that's not recorded and is a little bit lower commitment, just to kind of like, not that this isn't fun, but to kind of like rekindle the personal aspect of playing a tabletop game, like just the focusing on being with your friends and just having a good time and not having nagging on your shoulder the little gremlin telling you that you have to be entertaining to people who are listening. That sort of thing.
I've never once thought I was entertaining to people. I'm here personally for 4 years to try and torture my friends with a campaign.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Mission accomplished. No, I understand what you're saying. I love playing IRL with my friends here. Yeah. Sometimes it takes us hours before we roll a dice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's okay. You know, sometimes you get together to play a game and then you find out that you don't want to.
Well, we start playing and then I start describing the setting, what's happening, and someone else interrupts and is like, oh, by the way, did you go to see this movie? Blah, 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 blah. And we talk 10 minutes and they're like, sorry, you were trying to say something there, Patrick.
And obviously I tried to inject a little bit of that because, I mean, like when you listen to people play an actual play podcast, you don't want to, like, you know, unless you're watching like Critical Role or something like that. You're not watching professional performers. You're watching friends play a game. And, you know, I always wanted to try and like bring an element of that because I like that. I know there's people out there who enjoy it. I know there's people out there who probably hate my guts for every time I speak up out of turn. Oh, but, you know,
can't believe you keep trying to interject goofs and gaffes throughout this show.
Well, there's always that guy at the table, though.
And, well, I,
you know what?
I gave you a hard time, but honestly, I mean, it's the reason I play tabletop role playing games is to have fun with friends like this, even if we're telling like a serious quote unquote story or in the middle of combat, being able to goof around and chat is always,
I think
always welcome. Yeah.
I came as a player. I realize that I have some things to work on. I find that I get really frustrated at certain results and whatnot with combat and dice rolls. And, you know, I have my opinions of balance, game balance and Paizo products in general. But at the end of the day, I just have to like not take it personally and kind of roll with the punches. And that's something that I need to work on. I feel like I let it get to me more than a few times when stuff just didn't go my way. And, you know, it's that high variance role play stuff, man. You always have to, you always have to leave room for failure because it will happen. So,
yeah. Yeah, and that's I've played with many players that have the exact same reaction you do sometimes. Mm-hmm. And no, I agree with them for the most part.
Yeah. I still like, speaking of book two, when Honto was just trying to jump across that small creek and I fell because I rolled like a one or a two.
Oh,
shouldn't have happened.
Shouldn't, but it did. Yeah, no, there's some jumping problems early on, but I always,
there were. I was like, I built this character on jumping. He doesn't jump good.
I love it. I loved it, and but it shows a great growth because at the end, it's like, you know, like
just,
I said,
he just had to snap his fingers and he could fly towards.
I was about
the end,
to say so he's basically a fly. Well, no, it's. I imagined it was kind of like a wushu, like flying, you know.
Like I said, it was somehow finding air currents that would give him enough purchase to propel himself through the air. Bizarre movement, you know.
Yeah. As down on the system, sometimes as you have been, as sometimes not, you know, as into the same plot as Tyler was soaking it up as you might have been from book to book. Seth, it has been truly an honor to play with you this entire time.
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
It's tied for me for like one of the longest campaigns I've ever done. I mean, you know, maybe not in like play time, but like the length of time over the course of all these seasons and books and what have you. But I was looking back on it and in my notes, I was just like, so really, I was happy to play second edition. I was unhappy to play the same campaign again. But in the end, the four characters that you guys made and playing with the four of you have made this a very fun time and made it totally worth
it. I'm glad.
Like I said, it was I never saw myself because there's so many APs doing the same one twice, but very happy that we were able to get through this one.
Yeah, no, it was a really good one. I enjoyed this one a lot. And again, I mean, I know that I'm like the one person you've added to the Cosmic Crit family since your inception. So I know that's no small thing to do. And I really appreciate you having me along for this whole crazy thing. And for people who put up with me joining up for it.
I was about to say, I think you make this podcast. It's not the subtraction of Drew and Miles, but no, the four of you guys gelled very well, and maybe it's also the fact that it's just a four-player campaign. It just
maybe
it rocked. It was, you know, like I said, these 4 years have gone very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I really just enjoy all your guys's company. I definitely became a lot closer to Jabert and Rebecca. I already knew you and Tyler pretty well coming into this, and it's just been a lot of fun just being there for each other and hanging out before and after the game, and the whole thing has been a fun ride.
Okay, so just another 4 or 5 or 6 years of gaming with me, and then you'll take over in GM, right? And I'll break the curse.
I wouldn't be opposed to running something.
Just I think 5 year campaign. That's all
I think I need to have a moment or two of rest before I can commit to something like that though.
Well, we only got about 45 years left. So gotta get on that.
Woof. Dark.
don't think about that. But when campaigns take this long, I had a friend who, hilariously enough, kind of a ship in a bottle thing. He was like 60 at the time, mm-hmm. but he made ships in a bottle. Like that is what his side job was. He did it for museums. He did it up here in Boston, you know.
Oh, interesting. For
that. And they take, you know, months, if not years, to do.
Yeah.
And this affected, I was in my 20s, and when he told me this, he was talking about how he has to pick the ships out very carefully that he decides to do, because he only has like 10 ships in a bottle left in his lifetime. And that messed me up so bad. I was like, what? Yeah. He's like, yeah, I can't do that many, you know, just because of time and costs and, you know, the That's investment.
Nuts to think about. Woof.
So he takes orders, and, you know, in his free time too, he takes those very seriously. And I'm getting to the point where it's like, I can't start a bad campaign. I can never do one that I'm not like ready to go through
fair.
It with. And like I said, I was feeling bad about this campaign, but very quickly, once we started, this turned into my favorite game.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad. And, well, now that we're all thinking about death, and
I've brought down
time,
what's the death of the podcast? We should be talking about it.
Can you just like have taps playing in the background through this whole recording?
I have this weird color mole. I really got to get looked at, Seth, is all I'm saying. I got to go to the doctor. like a month ago.
I see. All right.
Well,
cool.
It's been good play, Raytheon. That's going to do it for this chat.
I got to go do a thing.
I got to go cry silently in a pillow. No, thank you, Seth, for playing with me.
Thank you, Patrick, of course.
Only about 200 episodes or so. And
that's all.
And listeners, thank you for listening. Like I said, we have more, what I hope will be very happy, uplifting conversations with the entire cast and crew, including some special episode discussions where we'll talk more in depth about the podcast, what could have been, what was, and finish up Dead Men Roll No Crits. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters over the years that have made this podcast possible, made all these memories possible that we were able to share in part with you. And Freebie Captains, people are probably listening to this in the year 2030, Seth, still.
Oh, we're cooked. We're not going to be around that long.
I just delete all the episodes of the podcast.
No, I mean the planet.
Oh, I'm the depressing one. Thank you everyone that's listening to this in the alien spaceship that found the remains of Earth.
Yeah, this is NASA found this, and they're like, this is what the aliens have to hear.
We're the only source of culture. We're the only thing that survived is like one thumb drive full of podcasts.
Oh, I am so sorry, everyone.
Oh, gosh, can you imagine? All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you, listeners, and we will catch you on the next end of Dead Men Roll No Crits.
Yahar.
Yahar. Yahar.
Yoo-hoo.